The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bust?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
don't! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
And welcome back to another edition of the Computer Corner. It is, in fact, that time of the week when we all get together and talk technology. This week, we have Ken Colburn, Kevin Church, the data doctors du jour, and of course, our friend Lewis from Mac Media. Not the Lewis that calls in, but the Lewis that's in the Mac world, right?
The other side.
Yeah, let them hear your voice so that they know which Lewis we're talking about.
The Lewis from
Mac Media.
Mac Media.
There it is.
There you go.
And the Kevin from Data Doctors.
Yeah, there's only one of those.
Correct. So far.
There's only need. And we only have one need for one, Kevin.
Yeah.
So. You know, I've been doing this radio show for, we started doing radio in 92, I believe, with KTAR around the Michelangelo first kind of launch of Michelangelo, and then it became a regular thing, I think, in about 95. So I've been doing this radio show a long time.
Almost before the internet.
Way before the internet, went from the standpoint of the general public, certainly not the ARPANET. Having said that, obviously when you come in and do something like this over and over again for 15 years, it's real easy to get into a rut. But you know what? The reason why I every week love coming in here is that I have the opportunity to teach people new things. And, you know, we're all in the business. You know what it's like when you show a friend some new trick or something new and you see their face light up and the light goes on and they get it. You know, when people really get it, I love the show. And today I'm so charged up about what we're going to be able to teach people because there's two concepts here that I think are pretty amazing and the future of our collective lives. It's not like you get a choice whether you're going to participate in this grand experiment called the internet. It is the driving force of our culture and how we do things. And understanding how to leverage the internet better and how to interact with others and how to, you know, become part of the community. There's so many benefits from that. And so there's a couple of things that we're going to talk about today that I'm particularly charged up about. One is called crowdsourcing, which is what we introduced this concept a couple of weeks ago on our Geek Speak of the Week, but today we're going to take a deep dive into this term and what it really means and give you practical examples of crowdsourcing that you driving around in that 72 Chevy pickup, you have been engaging in crowdsourcing unknowingly for probably years. And understanding the value of crowdsourcing and where you, those of you out there out of work, crowdsourcing is a way for you, especially if you have a specialized skill set that you're finding a tough time getting a job for your skill set and you're looking at, well, I'll take whatever. There are people on the internet looking for your skill set right now.
So there's no need to just stick a piece of paper in a fax machine and fax to every single number out there.
Exactly. Do what you're doing in the real world to try to get to that gainful employment, but we're going to show you, especially those that have specialties. If you're an out-of-work chemical engineer, I'm going to show you a site where you can probably go. If you can solve a problem for a chemical engineering firm, the bounty on that problem is $40,000. How's that for a month's work? If you're that good. If you're a web developer, if you're a software programmer, crowdsourcing websites are actually out there that you can participate in. And if you're the guy that gets the job done before the other people that are all trying to figure out this problem, there's something in it for you. So this is not just a ooh, la-di-da. This is commerce. If you're a business owner, you're trying to solve a business problem. I'm going to show you a number of different ways today that you can actually solve those problems. So I think this is going to be one of those bookmark this radio show page. Keep track of all the stuff we talk about because these are going to be those links that you will keep forever and refer back to and use whether you're a business owner, you're unemployed, you're just a casual user, you're a soccer mom, it doesn't matter. I think we've got crowdsourcing examples that are pretty compelling for everyone listening out there. The other thing that I'm really charged up about is it's time to teach you all about the next phase of communication. Lots and lots of people have heard about this company, this program, but you haven't engaged and you really don't know what it's all about. And so after the break here, we're going to go into the whole world of Twitter and why it is potentially that next evolution in communication. The email to cell phone, the cell phone to text messaging. The futurists are all saying, and actually it's not even a futuristic thing anymore. It's right around the corner. The next level of communication that a lot of people are saying is Twitter. And we'll explain what it's all about and how you can start to understand it. And even, you know, if you want to learn, you can learn by following us. So we are now providing information through Twitter, which, again, I'll explain greater detail after the break there. But 602-277-5827 is the phone number if you want to chime in. One of the reasons I'm so charged up about social media and all this stuff that's going on is I just got back from our International Franchise Association annual conference. And last year when I talked about Twitter and Facebook and social media, kind of got that blank look. Like, yeah, whatever, dude. It's like, I don't get it. I don't have time for this. Yeah, the typical stuff you hear. And over the years, we've seen it go from everybody under the age of 20 got it, and then everybody under the age of 25, and then everybody under the age of 30. 40, 50-year-old people now are starting to understand there's something going on here. I don't understand it, but I understand that I better understand it. I need to learn this. I need to figure out what's going on. I need to stay with what's happening because it's going to have an impact on your business, on your personal life, on everything you do. Social media is such an amazing thing that you've got to get up to speed so that you can leverage it in your own life, whether it's personal relationships, business relationships, it doesn't matter. So that'll be another focus for a show down the road where we'll really get into all the different social media sites and, more importantly, how you use it.
Well, I think, too, is a lot of these mainstream media companies, you know, the big stations out there are starting to use this technology themselves. So you may not know what it is, but you'll actually see. You know, I've watched TV and seen the Twitter stuff on TV and go,
what the heck is that?
What is it? I mean, how does it work? But, you know, the information was coming in much quicker than these reporters could actually even go out there and get it themselves.
The plane crash, the first report was through a Twitter, what they call a tweet. We're going to talk about that again in more detail. It is the Data Doctors and Lewis from Mac Media here to talk to you today. Stay tuned for more of the Computer Corner. And welcome back to the crowdsourcing edition of the Computer Corner. Ken Colburn, Kevin Church, and Lewis from Mac Media talking about this amazing power of the crowd phenomenon that's going on. That you know, it really this underscores how powerful the internet is and how community-based it is. So let's start with the first crowdsourcing site that most likely all of you have participated in what's called involuntary crowdsourcing. In other words, you're participating, but you didn't realize you were. Most of you have complained in emails to us about various websites where they make you type this strange string of text before you can submit something.
The one that I can never read.
Yeah. They're called CAPTCHAs. And it's an acronym. Basically, it's technology to try to separate these robotic systems that go around trying to fill out forms on the internet from humans. So the fact that you have to look at something and type it in is one of the ways that they eliminate the ability for these automated programs to just fill out forms and spam people. So, you know, it's one of those necessary evils. We started doing that because we were getting bombarded with junk on our radio show inbox. And if you'll notice, we don't give you an email address. We give you a place to go where it says ask a question. We want you to fill out a form because then we can control it and have a better chance of it getting through spam filters and all that good stuff. Well, the bad guys, they're automated robots. You know, first generation of that form, they were just filling garbage out all over the place. And it was just filling the inbox with garbage. So we had to put in a CAPTCHA. Basically type in that little string of text so that we know you're a human being. And that worked great to cut down the problem. But then our blind listeners started harping on us because our CAPTCHA system didn't have any way to work with a screen reader, which is how blind internet users, and by the way, I've gotten this straight from our listeners. It's not visually impaired. That's that PC thing. They want to be referred to as blind. So just so that everybody's, oh my gosh, he's not being politically correct. I'm doing what my listeners said is the proper way to address them. Anyway, they let us know, hey, you're keeping us out of the system, the process, because we can't, our screen readers won't work with us. So we went out looking for a company that had a CAPTCHA that was capable of working with screen readers, and ran across this company called ReCAPTCHA. And it's a website, and it's one of the links on our website. And so theirs will solve the problem so that if somebody has a screen reader, the characters do come out. But what the cool part is this is actually a crowdsourcing website that helps digitize books. So every time you run across that crazy string of text, got a line in it, you're trying to figure out why they put this big line in there. It makes it really hard to read. You're actually involuntarily doing digitize. You're editing a book just one word at a time, right? You're helping them figure out what the heck is in that, because when they digitize books, they use something called OCR, which is optical character recognition. OCR in its best state is probably about 95% accurate. So that other 5%, somebody's got to figure out what the word is actually supposed to mean. So it's a brilliant combination of things, right? It helps websites keep junk out of their forms. Blind users have access to those forms now because they've figured that out. And they're solving this other huge problem where, you know, you normally have to pay people and it would take forever. You're taking the crowd, which is the internet. There's something like 2 million scans have been cleared up as a result of this program. And it costs the company nothing because they're leveraging the crowd to do the work.
So if you're blind, this would be audible at that point?
Correct. The screen reader's able to read that string of text.
Okay.
Whereas if you don't have one that's designed to work with screen readers, because screen readers, you know, basically are looking for alt tags, and most CAPTCHA graphics don't have alt tags. So without the alt tag, and I apologize for getting into this technical discussion with Lewis on the air, but anyway, that's why it works.
Okay.
There's another one that's really cool. It's a beta program from Google, and it's a game put up, and it's, you go in there and you compete with somebody else on the internet to see who can name the most items. They show you a picture for like 30 seconds and then give you 2 minutes to put all the stuff that you saw in the picture, and whoever comes up with the most wins, right? Well, guess what you're doing when you play that game? You're helping Google index every photograph in their database.
Why not?
Is that brilliant?
That is pretty brilliant.
This is crowdsourcing. This is where you probably have already engaged in crowdsourcing. When we come back now, hopefully I've kind of piqued your interest on this, because when we come back, I'm going to show you a site where if you're a really smart guy or smart gal and you want to make some money, anywhere from $5,000 to $1 million for solving a problem for a company that's looking for help. And if you're a company, I'm going to show you how that approach may be the best way for you to solve one of your next big dilemmas. So crowdsourcing is awesome. It's here and it's available to all of us in any way, shape, or form. So 602-277-5827 is the phone number. When we come back, more about crowdsourcing and Twitter. Hey, y'all. Thanks for joining us here. It is the Data Doctors talking about crowdsourcing. How it's really going to change the way you view the internet and how you use the internet as more and more websites that take advantage of the collective wisdom of the crowd start to pop up. Before we went to break, we were talking about, you know, if you're out of work, you definitely want to go through the normal processes of applying for jobs. But there are a plethora of crowdsourcing websites that are looking for people, especially those that have specialty skill sets, which, in a downturn, if you get laid off and you're one of those individuals that has a specialty skill set, well, there's only so many of those jobs out there. It's tough. Well, the internet may be a way for you to bridge the gap. Or if you're gainfully employed, but you just like to help other people and get compensated for it, point your browsers, will you, won't you, should you, shall you, to a website called Innocentive, I-N-N-O-C-E-N, TIVE, and the link is on our website, datadoctors.com/radio. All the links that we're going to talk about today are in that resource section. So in Ascentive, you'll see references to this in Wikipedia. I heard about this from a technologist that spoke at the IFA conference this past weekend, which I've already Twittered about, told everybody on my that's following me on Twitter about this really cool guy. Ascentive is basically a place where companies that are trying to solve very complex problems post up the problem and post a challenge reward. So I just clicked into the chemistry section, and there's a company here that says they're looking for help on water interaction indication label. And of course, this will only mean something to like 12 people out there, and maybe not even that many. The challenge is the seeker is looking for material that changes color upon submersion in water. Current commercially available technologies are typically inadequate in some environments, and you read more into that. But the challenge reward is if you solve this problem for this particular chemical company, they will pay you $30,000.
I've been tinkering around on this site for most of the break, and there's some stuff. I mean, most of it you've got to be pretty knowledgeable in any specific area that it lists, but there was one in particular of a company looking for a sustainable packaging, just for bags and whatnot that's environmentally friendly, and they're offering $25,000, and only a written submission is required.
Well, and if you're a math wizard, I just went into the technology, the computer science and information technology section. Robust clustering algorithm for two-dimensional data.
I'll get on that right now.
Right. So seeking is looking for an elegant and effective algorithm for, I mean, so people that are in this world know what this stuff means, and they probably go, oh, yeah, I could do that tomorrow. $15,000 challenge reward. But so this is over the head of a lot of people out there. But, okay, let's say you have a company, and you have a complex business problem or some specific to your industry. You have a complex problem. You have to go to an R&D department, right? Or whatever. You got to find people that are smart enough to do this. So traditionally what you do is you put the problem out to bid, right? You'd put it out there so that people would understand what the parameters were. You'd get bids from people, and then you'd have to choose one of those bids, and then that one person works on your problem. Think about what's going on here with crowdsourcing. Who knows how many people are working on the same problem at the same time? But do you see how this is likely to get done quicker? And certainly more efficiently, and probably the amount of information you're going to get, because you're tapping into the collective wisdom of the entire world to solve this problem. And it's ingenious.
So if you're sourcing information in this way, and say 10,000 people go and post something, and then, of course, you've picked one of them and paid that person for that product that they came up with.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still own the rights to the other 990?
I think every one of these will clearly tell you, and you when you say, I agree, you're saying, anything I contribute, I do not have rights to. All the intellectual properties belong to the person posting the challenge reward. So you could end up with even more information you needed.
Sure, because when we were talking in the past about when Apple decided, maybe we could get Windows running on an Apple machine, and people were going, well, that's going to take quite a few different engineers and a lot of time to put this all together. Well, then someone put out a $10,000
bounty,
reward,
right?
Bounty,
yeah.
And said the first person that comes up with a working version of this is going to get the $10,000. And within a week, they had a working version of Windows on the Mac OS.
There you go. Exactly. Crowdsourcing. It goes on all over the place. And there's lots of other websites we're going to talk about as time goes on. But Todd's been holding, and he's got a question that I think a lot of you out there consistently have. Because Hello. Since I'm in the data recovery business, I know most of you don't answer that question in time. And then you have to bring it to us, and we have to try to save your bacon, and it costs a lot of money. So, Todd, what's your question?
I'm looking for a friend of mine. Basically, I told her to back up all the time on her computer for her business. She'd been doing it for a while, and then she stopped. Well, this last week, she had a problem with her computer, took it in to somebody to have it fixed, and now the computer's all messed up. And she hasn't backed up for probably 6 months now.
And it's kind of ugly now, huh?
Yeah. So what I'm looking for, I'm trying to help her out, trying to see if you guys can recommend a backup program that's automated, which means that she won't have to do it. It'll do it every day, 9, 3 a.m.
Well, if it's automated, you'd want to do it every night, not every Monday night.
Okay, true.
Now, and a couple things. Everybody listening out there, they're trying to figure out, what should my backup interval be? The easiest way to answer that question, because it's different for everybody, is what am I willing to lose?
Exactly.
So if you say I'm going to back up once a week, you're saying I can lose a week's worth of work and not think twice about it. If you're saying every day, you know, I'd be upset if I lost a day's worth.
Yeah, I can't imagine losing a day's worth of emails.
Well, there's even backup systems now that are actually, as stuff changes, it's backing it up to your backup system. So there's...
Would be incremental.
Well, it's not incremental, but it's actually real time.
Okay.
It's like as you're doing it. So it's not like every day at 5 it does a backup. As it sees things changing on your primary drive, it makes a copy to your secondary drive, almost like a secondary mirroring.
Sure.
So there's a lot of those things out there, and there's pros and cons. Unfortunately, there's not a one-size-fits-all that's best for everybody. Here's the problem with the automated deal. Be careful what you do and how you sell this to your friend, Todd.
Okay.
Because automation, when you start talking automation to people, they start to think, well, that means I don't even have to think about backup anymore.
Right.
And that's wrong. Automation just means the system is going to perform a function, but the human sure makes sure. I sound like Caesar Milan now, don't I? A human human needs to make sure that automated process is occurring, because what'll happen is the little piece of software, the agent that you install to do the backup,
right?
Somewhere along the line, something will happen, or somebody will say, well, "I don't know what this is," and they turn it off or they disable it or whatever,
and it won't be back.
And guess why I know this, Todd. Guess what happens when people find themselves in a pickle?
They come to you.
They come see the data doctor. So I've heard every story. I know exactly what causes people to do what they do, and this is a big one. So there's two ways two approaches you're going to want to go with, and it really depends on the comfort level of that particular individual.
Okay.
One of the best values out there these days is some form of online backup.
Okay. Where
your stuff's getting, because it solves a couple of problems. One, it gets rid of a human has to remember to do something problem.
Right.
Right? And minimizes it to a human needs to make sure that it happened. Not do it, just make sure it happened. Two is, let's say, is this a home business or is she working in an office?
Well, no, it's a home business.
Okay. So let's say she's got a nice backup hard drive sitting on her desk with her computer.
Mm-hmm.
She has a fire.
Okay.
Done?
Done, yep.
Somebody breaks in and steals everything.
Yep.
Done? So offsite backups are a critical part of a good disaster recovery program. And the best way to understand what you should be doing is to work backwards and say, okay, in this scenario, if this house burned down and everything in it was destroyed, what would I do?
Okay.
Okay, yeah. And if you can't answer that, then your backup strategy is not effective.
Gotcha.
Okay, so I know I'm being a little general here. But there is, I mean, multiple types of backups. So having an external hard drive that does an automatic backup and an online backup, an internet-based backup, as a secondary, that's another good strategy.
Yeah, I didn't even think about the online backup.
Having two different external hard drives and people that just don't want it. There's a lot of people out there that don't trust the internet, even though this is all encrypted and as secure as it can be. So if somebody's going to use an external hard drive for their business, ask them if they're willing to get two and rotate them like in a safety deposit box or somewhere else. So at least they have some kind of a safety net. It might have been from last week or last month, but it's better than losing everything, right?
Right.
So backups become so complicated that when it wasn't complicated, people weren't doing it. Now it's so complicated, people are going, which one should I use?
Yeah. You know, the other thing, too, with backups is the whole verification process to make sure that it did indeed back up. It's always nice when you get that pop-up window that said backup was successful and has been completed, because I have a lot of people come into my location, and I say, well, do you have a backup? And they go, yeah, we have a backup. I'm going, well, when was the last time you backed up, or are you sure it did backup? And a lot of times I'll see errors.
Mm-hmm.
On that backup, they had no idea, and it hadn't been backing up for 6 months.
Yeah, that's another important point, Todd. Validation or verifying the backup, a lot of people turn that off because it takes twice as long.
Right.
Okay. Which means, well, yeah, I threw some files over there. I'm not really sure if they stuck to the wall or not, and neither are you. So do you feel lucky, punk?
Exactly.
You know, I was like, you got to have that verification, validation of that data as well, or else, again, you end up at the doorsteps of our data recovery labs.
Okay, well, okay. She may come in. She may be bringing in her system to you guys anyway.
Well, hopefully it's not a thing where the stuff got lost. It's just been scrambled and just needs to be reorganized.
Well, the problem is that the guy did a recovery on it. He was supposed to do, I think, like a week ago. I think he went back a year.
Well, when you say he did a recovery, that's so open-ended. While we're on that subject, anybody in a situation like this, if the person that's going to try to recover your stuff is going to try to do it on the drive that you're actually trying to recover from, I mean, the biggest mistake out there is people go get a piece of data recovery software and they install it on the drive that has the lost data. And so now...
So you're writing over the same sectors.
You could be writing over that, exactly. Data recovery is a very sophisticated, very... It's a process you really have to understand what you're doing, because one misstep is not only will you not get the data, you're going to destroy the possibility of a professional getting it, because you've basically trampled all over everything. So if it's important, be very careful. Most data recovery companies, and this is not a pitch for our service because there's a bunch of great companies out there that are good at data recovery, most of them will be more than happy to have a conversation with you on the phone, no charge, to review your situation and help you understand, you know, if you're going to try to do it yourself, get the guidance from the professional so you don't do something that basically makes it impossible. So hopefully, Todd, use that approach of let's talk about the most likely scenarios, theft, fire, flood, all that stuff, and then obviously crashes and those kinds of things. And make sure your backups strategy covers all those things.
Will do.
Okay?
All right, thank you very much.
All right, good luck.
All right.
And hopefully others will learn from their pain. This is the Computer Corner, crowdsourcing Twitter and backing up. Stay tuned for more. And welcome back to the Computer Corner. If you are not currently a Twitter user and you want to start to learn what this is all about, there's a very easy way for you to do that. If you go to our website, datadoctors.com/radio, you'll see today's crowdsourcing discussion and all the resources. At the very, very bottom, it says follow the Data Docs on Twitter. Just think of it as a way for me to send you information as I learn it. So now, right now, if you're a newsletter subscriber, once a week, you're kind of getting some information and ideas from us. If you are, if you read my weekly column, then once a week you can go read. But I'm learning things that I want my readers and listeners and viewers to know throughout the week. And some of them, you know, I don't have any choice but to wait till the next newsletter cycle to get the information out. And a lot of times it's like some of these zero-day exploits. So the bad guys figured out there's a hole in, you know, an operating system, whether it's Mac or Windows, whatever, and they're already exploiting it before Microsoft can actually get the patch put out there. And usually there's a behavioral component. In other words, if you stay away from this type of activity while this patch is being developed, you're gonna have a much better chance of not coming across this particular type of malicious attack or the new ways of getting you infected to become a zombie on a botnet. I mean, there's so much going on out there. I'll be more than happy to share that finding with you real time if you want to follow me on Twitter. And that's just another way for me to continue to try to educate my audiences in a way that's, you know, you decide how you want to consume this information. This is not something you have to send something out. It's going to, you know, hit you with a text message or whatever. You choose how you want to do that. You can choose to follow me through RSS, through email, through your cell phone. If you want a cell phone text message for whatever it is, Twitter is basically a real short way for me to do it. It's what they call a microblog. No more than 140 characters, including the spaces. So this information is very small, very concise. It's also another way. Right now, we just put the word out last night. We're going to start using Twitter, and we have 112 people that have said we're going to follow your tweets. That's what they call them. Not twits, they're tweets.
It's like 12 in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it's
less than an hour.
10 or 12 every, you know, it's like one a minute that's signing up right now because the word's getting out.
And apparently I'm a tweet now.
You are.
No, you're not a twit.
No, you're a tweep.
Tweep.
You're one of my tweeps, right? Or or a tweeple.
Keeping it real.
Actually, one of the first things I sent out to everybody that signed up overnight was, you know, get yourself up to speed on some of the terminology. Here's a resource. So that's the kind of thing I'm going to be able to do. I can let you know when, you know, CNN just posted not too long ago, posted the segment we did this morning. It's now part of their live archives. Here's the direct link to it. There's a issue with online gaming that I sent out last night before a lot of people signed up. You can also tweet back at me during the show. If you hear us talking about a topic or talking to somebody trying to solve their problem, there are a lot of really, really smart people, smarter than me, that listen to this show every week. And if you want to chime in, here's another way for us to not have to be randomly picking up your phone call when you're holding forever to try to tell us or look at, you know, whether you can get through one of our email filters. You can tweet us right back with, hey, the guy that just called, here's a website or here's a solution or whatever. So it's a great way for us to interact. while we're on the air, afterwards, and then fill in the gaps between our newsletters and radio shows so that if something big or something important is coming along, or that cool aha thing that happens, you know, I'm so lucky. I've been in the computer business for 20 years, and it's like every day there's a new aha that's like, wow, this is so cool. So this is a way for us to convey that information to you. And again, you consume it any way you want. So check that out. Check out that link. And then if you're a business owner, think about how I'm using Twitter to interact with my office and my customers. And my. This is another learning lesson for you. This is where the world of marketing is going. This is the world of communication. This is where it's going. So listen to me now or listen to me later. We're going to try to help you. And we'll help you solve that problem of, well, who's got time for this? We're going to give you an example with Facebook of why that's so much better at communicating with your friends and family than the old way. So we're going to try to turn you from the dark side to this new crazy internet thing that...
Or even getting your tweets on your iPhone, for example.
Sure, exactly. All those things. So it is the Computer Corner. It's Ken and Kevin and Lewis, and we're going to come back and hopefully teach you some more gooder stuff. Stay tuned.
The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that a computer needs of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
don't! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
And welcome to hour number two of the Computer Corner. We're having a good time wishing you a here. Oh, wait a minute. We're here. The broadcast sense, they're here in the internet streaming sense, they're here in the email sense, they're here in the Twitter sense. We started the show, I think we were at 89 or something, and we're up to 120 followers there, so I think they're getting it. In fact, I'm going to show a little love just to the folks that have signed up for the Twitter stream, right, for my tweets.
Little update.
I got a tweet from a tweeps coming later on in the show. Crowdsourcing is the shame of to go, so if you are just getting started listening, feel free to join us online, datadoctors.com/radio. You'll see all of the resources and why I'm so excited about crowdsourcing. But before we go on, it's time for the magical part of the show where we actually take a phrase, a word. Actually, I think we've thrown a million of them out there already today. But we have our structured Geek Speak of the Week segment here where we're going to introduce people to yet another term. You want to take this one, Kevin, or no?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, SMS is SMS. Our Geek Speak of the Week.
All right. What's that stand for?
Short Message Service. It's a technical name for text messaging.
Oh.
Since text messaging is not supposed to be a novel or a blog, it's a short message. That's hence the name.
So these would be all the LOLs that I get in my text messages?
Well, I think people that are still doing LOL, I think, you know, we definitely need to get them into the 90s. I mean, because that's so worn out, right? Do you ever use that?
In its SMS.
Do you actually use that in text messaging?
I think I've gotten a little bit more creative with it.
Yeah. I mean, there's
it's evolved.
Yeah. Let's move on, people.
LOL now is kind of like that. Smile you give somebody when what they said wasn't funny, but you kind of have to make them feel like they're not completely worthless.
You can always wink at them.
It's a pat on the back.
Okay. Yeah. It's like, good try.
So one of the reasons why I wanted to bring this up this week is there are a lot of new interfaces that will allow you to send text messages through other than your cell phone clients. Like, there are email programs now that have the ability to SMS people. And those email clients don't really care about what the limitation is for the number of characters on an SMS message, right? So people that use those interfaces end up sending out this humongous amount of text because their program, the sender program, will allow it to. The worst case was I got 16 in a row, 16 text messages, because that's how long one message was, chopped up into 16. And the person sending it had a client that would allow them to just put that much stuff into a text message because they weren't thinking in terms of what text messaging's for.
Did you go ahead and block that user from ever allowing you to do it again?
No, you just try to help people understand, you know, what they're doing and give them another chance. The second time it was only three. So regardless, just because your text messaging program will allow you to cram all that text in there doesn't necessarily mean that that's what you should do. Think about what's happening on the other side. iPhones, I think the text message max per message is, it's got to be 140 characters or something. It's not huge.
I'm not even sure, but the problem is I feel like I'm starting to, you know, with the text messaging, it starts to feel like email to me because I'm so fast on the iPhone now with the two-thumbing.
Yeah.
That you forget that you are text messaging and you think of it as an email. And so I think that's the problem people are falling into.
Sure. You got to follow the protocols here, so don't fall out of that. Again, we're up to 122 followers on Twitter, and we thank you all for taking basically, you're saying that you'd like to hear what we have to say, and we appreciate that very much. We'll try to make sure that those tweets continually provide you value and interest in the world that we live in, and hopefully we'll teach you things all week long. You don't have to wait for the radio show to hear little nuggets of knowledge from the Kenner here. Going back to the crowdsourcing, here's another really, really cool crowdsourcing website. Those of you out there that are launching new products and services, in a down economy, you got to reinvent yourself. You got to be creative. You business folks that are out there that are doing that, one of the things you're going to run into is, I have this great new product or I have this great new service, and I don't know what to call it. Every name I come up with is kind of goofy, and not only that, if I come up with a cool name, will other people think it's cool? Point your browsers to this website. Namethis.com, another wonderful crowdsourcing utility. Now, this is something any business out there can afford. It's $99. You have a product that you want, a product or service, something you're trying to come up with a name for. And I suppose, folks, if you can't figure out what to name your child and it's worth $100... You could probably use this website as well. But basically, the process that they use, you get a lot of people inputting and voting on the names that other people have inputted. So it's almost, they call it three world validated names for your thingamajig in 48 hours. So in 2 days' time, you'll get input from thousands and thousands of people what they think a good name is for the product that you're trying to name. And all those people that were involved will help vote the best ones. It's like a miniature version of American Idol, only it's your product and your name. Hmm. I mean, how cool is that?
That is pretty cool.
And because they're leveraging the crowd, the cost of that, I mean, anybody ever gone through that with a marketing firm or some of these companies that are out there that, I mean, that's what they do. And they're doing it based on whatever their quote unquote market research is. $99, 2 days, there's your market research. Tell me that's not. I mean, we all own businesses. This is phenomenal when you see stuff like this, right?
I've spent more than 2 days trying to come up with a name, so
it'll probably take you more than 2 days to come up with how to articulate what you're trying to say so that the people that are naming it are understanding, you know, what you're trying to do. So it is pretty amazing there. Let's go back to the phones here and see if we can help Steph.
Yeah, hey, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. It looks like you're having a little consternation. Let's see if we can help you.
Yeah, we bought our son a laptop 2 years ago for college, and in the 2 years, it has crashed. The hard drive has crashed 3 times.
Tell me what you mean when you say crash.
Well, he's gotten the blue screen, and he's gotten a new hard drive from the manufacturer. Can I say the manufacturer?
If you want.
Okay, Dell.
Okay.
And this last time that he just got it yesterday, they sent him a Fuji 2 hard drive, which I personally never heard of. I'm familiar with Seagate and, you know, a couple other ones.
Fujitsu makes very good hard drives.
Oh, okay.
Whoever, Toshiba just bought that.
Yeah, okay, because we, you know, and it's a refurbished hard drive.
Of course it is.
So do I...
That's called quality you can afford.
I know. Quality that Dell can afford is more like it. Am I able to go back to Dell and say, hey, you know, this happened 3 times so far. Are we able to get a new hard drive, not some refurbished hard drive?
Well, certainly you can, but here's the deal. I'm going to put you on hold because I don't want to cut you off early because we have to go to break. But I want to make sure, and this is a very common situation. Let's take out the details, but it's the same situation. I'm not happy with the people that provided me with my stuff. What are my options? Very good question, Steph. We're going to answer that when we come back. It is the Computer Corner, the Data Doctors, and Lewis from Mac Media back after this.
So my patient tells me she's trying to cut out the coffee because her family keeps reminding her of how bad it is for her health. But is it? There's a lot more to coffee than that wake-up flavor. Learn the truth about it this week on Primary Care with me, your host, Dr. Sam Benjamin, Saturday, 2 p.m. here on News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
If your doctor prescribed Lipitor, atorvastatin calcium, it was for many good reasons. And now there's another good reason to stay with Lipitor. You can save money with the Lipitor copay card every time you refill your Lipitor prescription, up to $120 a year. Just go to onlylipitor.com to learn about the copay card and the eligibility requirements.
Lipitor is not for everyone, including people with liver problems and women who are nursing, pregnant, or may become pregnant. You need simple blood tests to check for liver problems. Tell your doctor if you are taking other medications or if you have any muscle pain or weakness. This may be a sign of a rare but serious side effect.
While there are generic versions of some cholesterol medicines, there is no generic form of Lipitor currently available. That's why if you switch, it would be to a generic of a different medication. So if your doctor prescribed Lipitor and it's working for you, why switch? For more information, visit onlylipitor.com, call 1-888-LIPITOR, or see our ad in Health Magazine.
A wise man once said, opportunities are like sunrises. If you wait too long, you miss them. Another said, he who hesitates is lost. And another, you snooze, you lose. All words of wisdom, especially when it comes to the special offers available right now on a new BMW. Don't wait to take advantage of exceptional rates on beautifully equipped 09 models from an impressive selection. And here's another smart move. Choose a new BMW and spend nothing on maintenance. Not a penny for 4 years or 50,000 miles. That's up to $2,300 in savings over our competitors. Just ask us.com. But remember, time waits for no one. So stop by your local BMW center today.
Through March 31st, get 0.9% APR now on a 328i or 528i. Plus, BMW will make your first two payments. Visit phxbmw.com/finance today for details.
Escape to the outdoors. It's closer than you think. The International Sportsman's Expo coming February 27th through March 1st at the University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale. At the ISE Phoenix, there are bargains for everyone. Buy the newest fishing, hunting, and outdoor gear. Shop for ATVs, campers, boats, and more at the year's lowest prices. Meet with guides and lodges to book adventure trips nearby and around the world. Save money with special show prices. See the all-new Dodge Ram in the Dodge campsite. Bring the family to the Youth Outdoor Fit, free for kids 12 and under, plus free parking at the stadium. Tickets and discounts online at sportsexpos.com. This is it. Just once a year, the Sportsman's Expo, February 27th through March 1st at the University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale. Catch the big one.
Get discount coupons available online at sportsexpos.com. And check your local newspaper. The International Sportsman's Expo, coming February 27th through March 1st to University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale.
Tweet, tweet, it's the Data Doctors back here on the Computer Corner along with Lewis from Mag Media. We hope that you've gotten something out of today's show. Like I said, I was pretty charged up today because I really thought this was not necessarily groundbreaking, but I think I have a pretty good sense of my audience, and this is new stuff to a lot of people. A lot of people in technology are still trying to get their arms around Twitter, so the best way to get involved with any kind of social media is just jump in and just start playing with it. Kevin, you had an interesting thing with Facebook that we were talking about.
Yeah, I'd never really used a lot of those social networking websites before, probably about a year ago when MySpace and Facebook were pretty big. But I kind of hated MySpace, so I created a Facebook account. And over the past couple months, people from my past, whether it be high school or church when I was a kid, whatever, have been I've been getting in contact with them. And one guy I went to high school with and a girl that I knew from when I was like 10, 11 years old at church knew each other. And then their conversation was, how do you know Kevin? So it's just kind of cool.
It's almost like going to a class reunion online, and it happened like a month and a half while you weren't even paying attention.
Yeah, without all the awkward. What's going on, man?
Hey, hey, you look the same as you. No, you don't.
I didn't talk to you then. I don't want to talk to you now.
All right. Before we went to break, Steph called in with her son's laptop that seems to be munching hard drives. Is that correct?
It is.
So a couple things. A blue screen of death does not instantly cause me to think you have a bad hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a possibility that you have been going through a procedure that has been misdiagnosing what the real problem is, mm-hmm. and the hard drive keeps getting the blame.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be one issue. And unfortunately, because of the particular manufacturer you purchased from, their support mechanism is not real conducive to working through problems like this.
Exactly.
Because they cannot possibly, I mean, you think about those poor guys on the phone, even whether they're in India or in the United States, probably the most challenging technology job there is and one of the lowest paying is the people that answer the phone. And think about their second stuff. They're trying to help you with a problem they can't see. They've never seen your computer. And chances are, you know, you're probably not talking the same language that they talk. And they're supposed to try to figure this thing out and be right. It's a tough gig for them. I'm not giving anybody, you know, a pass on not providing great service, but that's the challenge with this particular mechanism. And I guess the big thing to learn from this is, anybody listening, make sure that if you're buying from a company that's their primary source of support, that you're okay with that. Because if you need more support, you probably should look for other vendors that provide a little more hands-on. There's a possibility that somebody looking at your computer hands-on would have come up with a different diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
So, your question is, they've diagnosed this thing as a bad hard drive multiple times.
Yes.
Okay? This smacks of laziness to me. Somebody saying, oh, that's what it was last time, so that's what it is this time. Let me get you off the phone and tell you we're going to send you a new hard drive. Has anybody done any kind of a diagnostic on the system itself?
He just got the hard drive yesterday, and actually he did take it into one of your stores.
Okay.
And they're now trying to actually retrieve the information off the old hard drive.
Right. But nobody's actually, so they're going off the basis that whoever diagnosed the problem at Dell was correct.
I guess, yes.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is, if it keeps happening like this, now obviously now you're dealing with refurbished hard drives, so now you've thrown in another variable. Because a refurbished hard drive, in my mind, just means it's pre-broken.
Exactly, and it's ready to be broken again.
Yeah. So I don't know if you saw our newsletter and guidance a while back that there was a class action suit against Dell for not providing what they said they're going to provide. Mm-hmm. Can file a claim with the you're here in Arizona, right?
I am.
Yeah, so you can go to the Attorney General's website and actually file a claim and state your case, mm-hmm. and see if that mechanism will provide you with some relief. With that particular manufacturer, or you can call back and say, look, this is ridiculous. Now, how many times, you said it's happened twice now?
Yeah, this is number three.
So this is, actually, it's happened three times.
Well, twice, yeah. We're on the third hard drive.
This is the third hard drive, okay. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the problem is the people you're going to talk to at the front lines, they have no power to do anything for you here, so you're going to have to be really persistent to talk to a supervisor.
A manager, and, exactly. Yeah. And that's what I had mentioned to him also.
Ask for customer relations, because that's always what I tell my clients. Ask for customer relations. Typically, when you have multiple repairs on an item, and if it's consistent, they might even get to the point where they go, you know what, we're going to send you a new machine. And I've had that happen before on the Apple platform.
The squeaky wheel syndrome does come into play on that. Steph, I put you on hold. I'm going to take your call and talk to you a little bit more off the air. We got another half an hour to go. Hopefully you've learned a little bit about crowdsourcing. Hopefully you've taken our invitation and join us on Twitter so that we can teach you how that whole thing works. It is the Computer Corner, Ken Colburn and Kevin Church from Data Doctors and Lewis from Mac Media. Obviously, you can email us with your Mac questions too, right? You got some answers?
Absolutely.
Back after this. And welcome back to the Computer Corner. We've thoroughly enjoyed ourselves talking about crowdsourcing and Twitter and a bunch of other stuff. Kind of a new concepts for a lot of you out there that when you start to get your head around some of these concepts, it's pretty mind-boggling and earth-changing, isn't it? I mean, we've only talked about a handful of the crowdsourcing websites that I'm referring to. Earlier in the show, I referred to folks that are unemployed or software programmers, or maybe they're unemployed software programmers. Well, topcoder.com, there's a site where you can engage with the software development community and bid on, or, you know, try to solve problems. Or there's a $100,000 predictive algorithm competition going on for ESPN right now. So if you're one of those hardcore programmers and you happen to be out of work, see if any of these possibilities are, you know, in your wheelhouse. Are you good at programming this kind of thing? And if you write the code properly and they accept it, I'm talking about getting paid. Huh? By the way, it's not mandatory, but anyone that ends up getting paid because of this show, because they heard this and they went and did this, I don't want to take, you know, the agent position, but I think
a finder's fee.
Some kind of, I don't even know it has to be monetary. I'm kind of into the whole wine thing these days, so. I'm you know, somebody makes $40,000 because they heard this on the radio show,
something with a good year.
A little thank you.
Well, you know, I have a friend, actually, he's a graphic artist and also does some animation as well. And he's kind of worked through the same type of thing as, you know, that crowdsourcing thing because, you know, work's not that steady, you know, within the animation area. And so a lot of these companies, like the, like you saw the ESPN on there, they'll put these competitions out and say, hey, you know, you guys want to collaborate and come up with something for this new commercial that we're putting out. They want it animated. And then they do a $5,000 contest, and they'll give you free pizza for the rest of the year or whatever it is.
It's amazing.
And, you know, and he's done four or five of these now, and he's won a couple of them. But, you know, it's a lot of work for what you get, but then you also get a lot of exposure out there in the community.
That's the other. It's the secondary part of this thing. You participate in the community. The community will embrace you. Netflix was doing another one. I think it's still going. I think theirs is like 100,000 if you solve one of their issues. So a lot of smart people out there. Some of you are out of work. Somebody on the internet is looking for your expertise. And in some cases will pay you very, very handsomely if you solve their problem. It's almost like a commission job, right? Where I solved this problem, therefore I get paid. If I don't solve it, I don't get paid. Is it the ultimate way to go? Eh. Not necessarily. There may be.
And you've seen that a lot, too. There's a lot of engineers out there that work on a contract basis. Mm-hmm. And this is a little different than that, but there's a lot of similarities.
Amazon was one of the early entrants into. Now, this crowdsourcing thing, it's not like it just happened last week. Crowdsourcing has been going on for a long, long time. iStock Photo is probably one of the original commercial crowdsourcing websites. We've been using them for years. For images that we need for our marketing pieces or our website or that kind of thing, right? Very cost-effective way to get professional photography. Their whole thing is they invite all these photographers to post their information or their pictures up there, and if people like them, they buy them for, you know, a lot less than it would cost for you to go out and hire a photographer to shoot this thing that I want. It's great for that kind of thing. There's the Amazon Mechanical Turk program that's been around for a while. I love the tagline for this. It's artificial intelligence. Because it's really not, it's like the opposite of artificial intelligence. It's real people. And they use things called HITs, which are human intelligence tasks. And it's everything from real basic to, you know, pretty complex things in there. So this for somebody that is business and developers, there's all kinds of different options on here. These don't have the big, huge $100,000 million bounties on them. So this might be another place where you go that right now there's 44,335 hits available. In other words, that's how many people are looking for you right now to solve a problem or perform a task for them. And it could just be remedial. It could be, so you make $5, you make $20. It doesn't, you know, the range is all over the place, but they're out there. So, and we'll try to keep you up to speed on these new crowdsourcing sites as we see them and we see that there's value. That's one of the things we can, you know, hey, found a new crowdsourcing site and I'll send it out through the Twitter system, right? So you'll get a tweet from me on a new crowdsourcing. My tweeps will get a tweet.
now when you start to compile a lot of tweeps, yeah. Can you turn tweeps on and off?
Well, certainly I could go in and say, I don't want you to follow me and block somebody out.
Uh-huh.
But that wouldn't serve my purposes here. Now, if somebody's stalking you or somebody decides to... See, when you start to set up a stream of consciousness known as Twitter, you can choose, do I want to make this publicly available and make it available so that anybody can start following me without asking my permission? Or is it private, so they have to ask my permission, I have to grant them permission? And then even if they do... You do grant them permission. If they get out of hand, you can block them. So I think a lot of people are struggling with Twitter, trying to figure out, is it like email? No. Is it like text messaging? No. Is it like a cell phone? No. It's not like anything. Just email wasn't like anything. Text messaging wasn't like anything. It solved a communication problem and gave people a more elegant way to communicate. It's another way to communicate.
Well, like you said before, it's a mini blog. So,
well, what problem did the text messaging solve? The problem where we never have to pick up the phone again? No.
No.
It did solve the problem that we don't always have to pick up the phone. See the difference?
So if you're out at the store and you need to get some milk and eggs and you don't need to have this conversation, just text it over. And
well, you can do that, sure. Or, you know, people are in meetings. Kids are not supposed to have their cell phones on while they're in class, so they have them turned off. Mom can send a text message when she knows that they're in class. And when class is over and everybody runs and, you know, grabs their phone, and really, they have them on the whole time. But you text. You can't call your child while they're in school, but you can text them so that at some point when it's appropriate for them to respond, they can.
Or like myself at a loud rock concert and you can't hear a thing.
Correct. I mean, I don't think it took too long for people to figure out how to use text messaging and how important it is. Twitter is a little more because it's kind of a new way, but it does solve a lot of communication issues. For instance, those of you that have been following me, not through Twitter, but through this radio show, newsletters, that kind of thing. If you signed up for the newsletter and we tried to send it to you and you don't get it, it's because your ISP is blocking mass mailed. In other words, unsophisticated filters that say anything that goes to more than X number of people on our system, we're just automatically going to flag it as spam and not throw it. That's why some of you can't get our newsletter. Well, this overcomes that. If you really want to get our stuff, you want to know what's going on, and as we're learning things, you can now subscribe to our tweets, right? Our Twitter account, where as we're learning things, we're just sending that out, and there's no filtering. It's just me to you. The minute you decide, nah, I don't want to do this anymore, you just remove yourself or block what's coming to you. You get to decide with this particular communication method. Do I want Ken's tweets to come through as text messages on my phone so that they're real time? In other words, I want to know. One of the guys that I follow is a really, really intelligent guy out there from the standpoint of understanding the social media world. His name is Peter Shankman. He's got a great resource. All of you business owners, get your pencil out here. Go sign up for this newsletter. It's called HARO, Help a Reporter Out. All of you people out there going, wow, sure would be good to get featured on a news story or a newspaper article, whatever, but I don't have $5,000 a month to give a PR firm. Peter's made it very easy for you to get in front of reporters and pitch your company's story, because he's going to send you three times a day the list of every reporter looking for everything under the sun, from technology to whatever. Okay? So this is a case study of why Twitter actually has value and how it comes into play. Despite the fact that he's sending out this list three times a day, there are times when reporters contact him and say, I got a deadline, I got to get this out in 1 hour. And he just sent out the afternoon dispatch. He can go to his Twitter masses and say, here's a reporter looking for a story on, and those people all get it instantly. So in those cases, those people all are saying, if Peter sends a tweet out, I want to get it immediately on my cell phone text message. Whereas if you're following me and you're saying, well, it's not that time sensitive, so I'll just check it, you know, send it to my email, or have my RSS reader just aggregate that, or I'll just go look at my Twitter account from time to time, and whatever's Ken said over the last 3 or 4 days, I'll just look at it as a condensed digest. You decide how you want to get the information. It's not a, this is the way it is and too bad. Text messaging, the only way you get that is you get it on your phone. Email, you get it in your email client, right? Here's a way for you to get information from people you trust, know something you want. It wasn't somebody signed you up for this, because they can't. So you can start to see how this thing really does have legs, really, that you can start to understand why futurists are really, really talking about Twitter as being that next evolution of communication, because it solves a lot of today's community. Not all of them, and it's not like anything. So all of you trying to figure out what this is like, it's not like anything.
Well, it seems like you'd be developing your own community, and that community would have more of your likes and interests.
Well, they're really interested in you, Lewis. They're interested in me, Ken.
Yeah, exactly.
And what I'm thinking. Okay, that's not everybody out there, but if they take the time to subscribe to my tweets, because they believe that I'm going to have something of value to share with them, and they don't have to figure out how to get that. It's me talking to everybody.
Direct link,
and then
yeah. All
those people can talk back. So it's really cool stuff. When we come back, we're going to talk some more about that and some more about crowdsourcing. It is the Computer Corner. Ken and Kevin from Data Doctors and Lewis from Mac Media back right after this. Loving it. I've had a great time today. Where are we at? Twitter followers, we're up to 133. It's not bad. We were at 12 last night.
No, not bad for a day's work.
Hey, spread the word, too. If, you, if you've gotten a few of my tweets already, you start to get an understanding of what it is that we're going to be sending out. If you think this thing is of any value, then tell your friends to follow the Data Doc. And I promise you I will do my best to, throughout the week, provide you little snippets of information that you will find valuable, little hints about what's happening in the world of technology, warnings when I see something that is disconcerting, or news stories that are of particular interest. There's a time down the road where this becomes our newsletter. So instead of consolidating this into a weekly digest, the newsletter is now transformed into these small little mini blogs about what's going on out there and keeping my audience up to speed as I learn. I was talking about I love wine so much. The wine bar that I go to has been phenomenal, instrumental. I got Divine Wine out there. There's one in Chandler, one in Mesa. And they've been written up all over the magazines and Food and Wine, and recognize them as well. They're great. But they're just down to earth folks that don't get pretentious about wine and will teach you. And they've taught me so much about wine. I'm thinking, I was trying to get the sommelier there. How are you, sommelier or whatever? It's a French word. The guy that knows all the stuff that's been trained to talk about wine. I said, you're learning stuff every day about these new wines coming in. I sure wish you'd put together a little Twitter account there. And as you're learning stuff, just tap out, hey, just try this new wine and just paired it with this whatever. You know, because that's what he does all day long. I want to know what that is.
Sure.
It's a perfect use for Twitter, right? As opposed to a newsletter where, okay, what was it that last week I talked about? What was that wine that I, you know, not to mention, I don't know how you do a job without constantly getting blitzed. That in and of itself, if you think about it, is a skill set. You drink wine for a living, but you're not bombed out of your head all day.
Well, he's tasting.
Maybe that's what I got that right. He's tasting it, not drinking it.
I don't buy it.
Oh. No, I've seen David. He drinks it, but he's
well,
solid.
You probably get, you know, you build up your immunity to some of that stuff over time,
I suppose. But I'm more interested in his knowledge. And that's, see, the commerce of the internet is not rubles, it's not shekels, it's not dollars. It's information. They don't call it the information age just for the heck of it. And if you really think about what causes you to use Google, is the information you get from Google, the reliability. Hopefully the reason why you tune into the show is we're providing you with information. Our newsletter provides you with information, and now our Twitter streams will provide you with information that you value. That is the commerce of the internet.
Well, the thing that I appreciate is this information is always current. And when I do go out and do some of those Google searches that or, you know, relevant searches, I might go back to 2006 on one of these searches, and I'm looking at the information and not reading the actual date and time that was stamped, and then realize that, oh, okay, this is outdated information that I'm looking at, and I have to do another search. With something like this, I might be able to use some of my tweets and get that information a lot quicker, and it's going to be current because it's today's information.
Well, and in the case of the wine bar that I'm talking about, I want him to get started on that because that way if I'm at home and I'm cooking something and I'm going, I wonder which wine I should try to pick because I don't know. I have a general, you know, red with meat and whites with, you know, but there's all kinds of pairings out there. Whatever I'm cooking, David, what's a good pairing for this particular type of dish or whatever, right? That's that kind of communication that you can have. It's very informal, small snippets. It's not this huge, massive 2,000 emails that you got to read through, right? And it gets right to the connection and the source of the information that everybody's looking for. How do you manage this? That's a future show. The whole issue of, I don't have time for this. You now have a relationship with how many people from your past, Kevin, from your Facebook page?
40 to 50
okay.
or so.
Could you possibly have done that by picking up the phone and calling each one of them?
Yeah, but I wouldn't have never stuck with it to
but
do
you
it.
Could, you don't have that kind of time. And that's the thing I think people saying, I don't have the time. They're still thinking in terms of their old life and trying to layer this new stuff onto their old life. People that are out there that have 80, 90 different people in their Facebook network, it's not they didn't spend hours and hours. They spent 30 seconds, but they're spending 30 seconds every couple of weeks or every couple of days. They have a good sense of what's going on in that other person's life.
Well, for the longest time, talking to my parents about this, there was so much disconnect between him and all his past friends, and they hadn't spoken for so long until he got back into the computer age, and now he's talking to these people that, you know, he grew up with, and he thought he would never see again or never spoken to again.
All right, so we're going to continue our discussion about social media. The Data Doc, if you're a Twitter user, you can start following us. Facebook, just search for Data Doctors, and you'll see our fan page if you want to connect to that as well. Lewis, thank you so much. Kevin, thank you again.
Yes, sir.
The Computer Corner, thanks you. We'll see you all next week.